We go with a shortened week. The Thursday now that feels like a Wednesday because we were off on Monday. It's Buckmaster rocking and rolling on a Thursday, the 23rd of January, 2025. Tom Fairbanks on the other side of the glass. The Weather Service had said it would probably get down to about maybe around freezing. Well, Midtown had 26 again this morning. Up at my, at the Buckmaster Bungalow, another 24 degree morning, and on it goes. And when the numbers are in, and that will be the end of next week, because it doesn't seem to be really, the pattern doesn't seem to be changing, Tom, until it, maybe into February.
This will go, cooler last night at my place than it has been
and
recently.
It will go down as one of the coldest, certainly, in history in Tucson, the coldest in 25 years at least. So it's been a real cold January, but remind me of what I am saying in about 6 months as I sit here on the radio and complain as we hit, like, I don't know, 115 or more.
Oh, no, that's Phoenix temperature.
Oh, sure, right. Yeah, back in the day. All right, we're in the Green Thing Zocalo Village studio. It's part of the Bustos Media Center in central Tucson. A lot of people think we're actually out at Green Things. It would be nice, but no, they have the naming rights to our studio at the Bustos Media Center in central Tucson, where we've got five radio stations under one roof. I'm excited about our five stations, all doing very well. This one's 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice for trusted news and talk. We began our 15th year on the radio, the Buckmaster radio program. I mean, I was on the radio and TV with NPR and PBS, but my own radio show, 15 years, starting the 15th year and 37th year in Tucson radio and TV. We have our worldwide live listening, the website's buckmastershow.com. We have pretty much every show we've done in that 14 full years at my website. When we do our telephone interviews, I want to thank Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management and Sean and the team over there for supporting our work on the Buckmaster Show. The city councilman, Paul Cunningham, has just arrived here at the studio. Paul, how are you, sir?
Thanks for having me, Bill. I'm doing great.
And you were listening to the governor. The governor comes down traditionally to Tucson and rereads basically the state of the state, right?
Yeah, traditionally, I mean, I think Governor Ducey and Governor Brewer have done it all, done those things each time. This was Governor Hobbs' 44th visit to Tucson since she's been governor.
Really?
But, yep. And, you know, she told the story of the Arizona Promise, which is, you know, basically the idea of people coming here and pulling themselves up by their bootstraps and making things happen. She told five or six different Arizona stories of people in Arizona who are inspirational and done amazing things and made good. She outlined a plan about increasing pay for correctional officers and police officers, a program for working families childcare, and not perfect water policy. You know, I'm a big maven about stuff like that, but definitely some water savings opportunities and some water conservation opportunities we can do, as well as trying to help out the farmers a little bit. So she touched on all the things. She did everything she needed to do to give us give us confidence in that her agenda is sound. It's to some degree bipartisan, and she's trying to really work with what she's got to present a good budget and some common sense solution to things. The last piece she touched on, which I thought was really important, she talked about ESA and how that program is just not properly—
The voucher program.
Yeah, it's just not properly—
And her reforms, by the way, the Republican legislature say are dead on arrival, but anyway.
So she touched on those, and I think there does need to be a little bit of oversight when when you hear the stories about people getting grand pianos and ski passes with their voucher money. That's
and trampolines and that stuff.
So I think she touched base on all those things. It was a very good event. I'll say this. hats off to Rob Elias and the Arizona Hispanic Chamber of Commerce.
They were the host, right?
Right, and they did such an amazing job.
I think their first time hosting
this
event.
Well, first of all, the Pueblo High School mariachi group singers did the national anthem in an arrangement I'm not familiar with, and it was beautiful. I mean, it was so Tucson. It was so special.
Yeah.
DM Honor Guard posted colors. That was real good. They had a great video program, so whoever they contracted through to do the video and the audio. And then, obviously, you know I'm going to put in a plug for the Tucson Convention Center that is owned by the city of Tucson.
How's it looking?
It's great, man. I mean, we got a little gem there. We don't really know what we've got. Some of the bigger, like, national conventions that come in don't, you know, we don't have the exhibition space we need.
Mm-hmm.
But the question is, do you spend a bunch of money on exhibition space like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then only get one event a year extra. So those are the things that we've struggled with for the last 10 years in discussing the TCC. What I'd say is this, is that across the street where GXI does their gem show, if they were to build an exhibition hall to host their gem show.
Not just tents, right? But some kind of...
They'd build an exhibition hall, and then the city would lease
it. A brick and mortar type.
Yeah, brick and mortar exhibition hall, an expansion of the exhibition space on site, more or less, right across the street.
Sure.
Maybe build a walking bridge or something.
Yeah.
And then we would lease it from the person who built it for 10 months a year. And that would be our augmented exhibition space. I'd love to work a deal like that out someday. I don't know if the opportunity has already passed with construction.
Is that a Rio Nuevo type deal?
It could be Rio Nuevo. It could be private. I don't, you have to make it worth both for Main Street and for Wall Street.
Because what's the space right now? Just a parking lot?
It's just a parking lot that puts up a tent for 2 months every year. Mm. And if you add up putting up a tent every year for two decades, you might as well just build what you want to build.
Yeah.
So I think there's opportunity there. We'll see what happens. I mean, but all in all, it was a good address, and it was nice that the governor comes down and at least gives Tucson some love. We've had governors that were very non-Tucson centric, if you will. So
right.
I appreciate that.
So there's some breaking news concerning that I-11 route. And for folks that don't know, this was a new interstate highway project that is quite a ways down the line, but probably will happen someday. There was a segment of this I-11 corridor that would be going through an environmentally sensitive area of Pima County, and that now it looks like has been backburnered. And so is that good news for the city of Tucson?
I think it's good news for us on a lot of fronts. First of all, the Saguaro National Monument West and the Tucson Mountains and where they were going to put that thing just didn't work for so many reasons on the ecological, environmental side, conservation side, tribal side. There were all these different complications to that piece, and I always had major concerns. Pinal Air Park, the Barrywater-Goldwater Range, I just was like, man, I can't be good with this. The other piece, though, was economic for me, and that was that you basically had a bypass out of Tucson, making Tucson less relevant. And I always think about the movie Cars. You know, remember that movie Cars with Owen Wilson, and he was the voice of Lightning McQueen, which was this hotshot race car. But the big thing that happens is somewhere in the movie, the hotshot race car is on the freeway, falls asleep, and ends up in a small town called Radiator Springs that's off the highway. And he asks what happened to the great town, and they say, well, they built the freeway away from the town, and nobody comes to the town anymore. So I didn't want to be Radiator Springs. So that was really my bigger concern about the original I-11 alignment, was that it was going to bypass Tucson.
Yeah.
And it would create kind of a vacuum.
Kind of a giant bypass around.
It wouldn't have been anything that would have happened overnight, but over a 25 to 30 year period, our downtown, our city core where people drive through on their way to El Paso or on their way to San Diego, between Texas and California.
Because we do get business, certainly.
We do.
From people so stopping.
I was worried that we'd become a little less relevant. So I was not a big fan of it. I was actually, I've been vocal and critiqued that that plan on this show. So to me, that's welcoming news that they're going to change that alignment.
Let's take the break a minute early here so we can then transition to what everybody is talking about, and that is Prop 414. That's the city vote on the city's sales tax increase. We'll talk with Paul Cunningham, Tucson City Councilman, about that and what we're hearing about a lot of the opposition. By the way, tomorrow on our program, the police chief will be here, Chad Kazmar. My co-media host will be Dylan Smith from TucsonSentinel.com. And actually, Paul, we're going to take a quick call before we do take the break, because Ted Maxwell, who is the representative, General Maxwell is the representative on the Arizona Department of Transportation Board, representing Southern Arizona, and he's called in on the live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Go ahead, General.
Good morning, Bill.
And morning.
Good to see that Councilmember Cunningham's all over the place. I just saw him this morning. So I agree with Paul on a lot of the concerns with the Otter Valley route. And I've told people that it's the fact that right now we don't have another alternative that led to that selection and put us way down on the priority list of segments that would ever get built. I truly believe many of us will never see it in our lifetime. But my question to the council member is this. The purpose of needing I-11 is as a bypass, because I-10 currently doesn't really have the capacity, and it definitely won't 10, 20 years from now when we get to the point of building I-11. So if not, something that completely avoids the city of Tucson and connects with I-19, where would the council member think that an acceptable solution would be? Because claiming it's I-10 is just physically impossible.
So Ted makes a good point. We're going to run out of room on that. And everybody, disclaimer, Ted Maxwell is one of my closest friends who I disagree with the most, but we get along and he's awesome. And what's funny about this is that the last time we were here, I think we were here together, and it was pretty good radio.
Yeah, it was very good radio, the two of you together.
Anyway, what I'll tell you is that we can't predict the future on the growth patterns of what Tucson's going to be. And so we make a decision now on where that route is. What happens is that we literally cast growth to one side or the other. I think there's all kinds of stuff we can do, whether it diverts the opposite way through the Cascade Valley, coming off of Picacho Peak and actually heading west right away, or it comes around but not all the way to Avra Valley. Maybe that route's a little closer in. And yeah, we would have two freeways a mile apart or 2 miles apart instead of seven. But if that becomes a necessary piece, we should do that. We can look at that. But right now, that goes into the nitty-gritty of where in the desert and how far out in the desert and what are you going to do. I'd also say that if we're going to be going around Tucson, we've really got to consider the vector at the approach vector at Pinal Air Park. So I think all those things haven't been considered. But we can get into the details if you want. The bottom line is that if you're worried about the traffic load on I-10, I think there's some other options that we could do within the city of Tucson where we build multiple. We may have a freeway that goes around the base sometime. We may have a freeway where Barraza and Golf Links go all the way through the city. And then that does lighten that load, especially coming off on the south side. On the southeast side. So I think there's definitely options in where the city can handle that traffic load.
Thank you, Bill, and I appreciate the question and the answer. And you opened up a lot of doors there, Councilman, so let's continue talking in the future.
All right, Ted Maxwell, thank you very much. We can listen to Ted's program. He's got a program here at on Tuesdays at 9 to 10, part of the Jump in Tucson nameplate that we have here at KVOI. All right, let's take a break right here. Buckmaster on a Thursday, and again, tomorrow's guest is the Chief of Police, Chad Kazmar, but right now it's the Tucson City Councilman, Paul Cunningham, right after this.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Take the Regional Transportation Authority's brief survey of its draft $2.46 billion Regional Transportation Plan. The 20-year RTA Next Draft Plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, and environmental improvements for the greater Tucson region. The RTA Board will consider your feedback before it prepares a final draft for voter consideration as early as November 2025. We invite you to take our brief survey at rtanext.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, and still got my fleece on here, wearing the vest. Still kind of chilly outside. Paul Cunningham with us in studio, and thanks to General Ted Maxwell for calling in. Ted is wears so many hats, doesn't he, Paul? He's got the Regional Transportation Authority, the Arizona Department of Transportation, and of course, he heads up the business organization, Southern Arizona Leadership Council.
Don't forget the Arizona Bowl.
Oh, the Arizona Bowl. Okay. Voters will decide, and I think the ballots are going to be sent out. This is an all mail-in election for Proposition 414. It's in early March, but the ballots will be sent out really in a couple of weeks. And this is about through a tax increase, sales tax increase, increasing revenue by $80 million a year. And there's growing opposition to this. How much? I'm not quite sure. But what's your take on this?
Well, first of all, no politician, and people have heard me say this before, no politician wants to raise taxes. I'm from the Disney generation, man. I watched the Robin Hood with the Fox. Remember that animated version of Robin Hood with the Fox? Well, you know, the bad guy's the bad guy because he raises taxes. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you're trained not to want to do stuff like that.
And this would raise, we'd have the highest sales tax of any city. Well, I think there might be a couple of others.
Not
tied.
So fast. Okay. First of all, the bottom line is that there's a portion of that tax that's countywide.
Okay.
And so you can't, it's really unfair to apply that to us. Also, we don't tax food, and other cities do tax food. I mean, there's some apples and oranges comparisons there. So, I think there's a retail sales tax quotient. This definitely puts us to the higher part
Of
the list.
Over 9%.
Yeah, it puts us to the higher part of the list, but it doesn't make us the highest. Okay. That's not a good statistic.
Okay.
What I will say is that nobody wants to raise taxes, and everyone is nobody wants to have to pay more. They see government waste, or they see certain things. We get calls all the time about, oh, I saw this guy on the freeway, and I saw this guy not doing anything, or I was at the park, and there were three people, and they had their uniforms on, and they were just talking. And it's like, but you don't know what all that means. I mean, you can't just jump to conclusions. I'd say that we run a very efficient program, and the needs in Tucson keep expanding. The bottom line is that the things that are happening right now, the fentanyl crisis, the housing crunch, and crime have all, people have come to us and said, we need more help with these things. And how can we address it? Well, this is the answer, this comprehensive plan to try to address each one of those things one by one.
Okay, let me throw a couple of quick criticisms at you and have your response.
Sure.
If this is such a crisis, why wasn't more cops and solutions to the unsheltered, why wasn't that in the city budget rather than why do we have to go to a special sales tax?
So a lot of it is, but again, we're not – those issues have grown even more. We have more and more folks that are this fentanyl crisis is not specific to Tucson. It's hit all kinds of cities, and we're just trying to be proactive to address it. So, again, I think that's not necessarily right all the way in there. Also, let's be honest, since post-COVID, everything has gotten more expensive. And so as a result, you run in and you need more people on the ground, you need more personnel, and those are just things that we need. I'll say this too. With the city budget, we've actually contracted the number of people we've had over the years. Part of it wasn't just about not being able to afford it. A lot of it was about being able to go through the logistics to get people. And we'd have situations where we'd try to put names forth for the police academy, and they'd get rejected by the state background checks. We used to have all kinds of different issues that. So this kind of helps us address all of those things. I think there's some neat things that add to this. It allows our social work data system and our court data system and our police officer data system to communicate in real time more efficiently. I also think it's very important that we expand the number of 911 operators we have, which is a must. And finally, I think that the expansion of both police officers and equipment is important for Tucson.
Let's quickly go to line one on the live line presented by Rincon Ventures. We've only got five. Boy, the time goes so fast. Only about 5 minutes, less than five. Sharon is on line one. Go ahead, Sharon, with Paul Cunningham.
Yes, I have a question, Paul. I keep adding up in my head all the things that the city of Tucson has chosen to do and is not required to do, subsidizing public transit at, I think, $5 or $6 million a month, doing reconstruction at Reed Park to ruin Randolph Golf with a pedestrian walkway, having a forestry department, even though the state has state and feds do that work, and pursuing having consultants and lawyers to do a hostile takeover TEP. Doesn't this all add up to about $60 million? If the city stopped doing extra things, would you still need a sales tax?
Okay, thank you, Sharon.
So let me start with the TEP. We're not doing a hostile takeover of the TEP. All we did was spend less than $150,000 on a study on whether or not having a public utility would be less expensive for our ratepayers than a private utility. I'd also push back and say that the subsidy for the bus at $6 million a month is probably that's accurate. But if we did implement the former fares, we'd only get about $750,000 a month back. And again, that's just not, it might cost us even more money just to collect the money. I think there's other issues with the bus as far as safety that we need to address as far as IDs and stuff like that. But whether or not we charge fares is kind of independent of this point. I'd finally say that with the Reed Park piece, we're not really doing much to the golf course. We're going to change one hole so that the running track on the 22nd side has a little bit more room. I mean, that it's a very brief thing. We're trading one par. We're making one par four into a par five and making one par five into a par four so we can get a little more interest. All that money was done through 307, which, by the way, is done through an oversight committee where you need to go through like three different pieces of oversight to make sure the money is spent the way the taxpayers intended. And we'll have that same type of oversight committee for 414.
Matt is online too. And Matt, you have 10 seconds to craft your question.
Yeah, I don't mean to pile on, Paul, but the transportation part that Sharon brought up was completely legitimate. And to just, until the council, you know, starts making attempts to put us back into a normal functioning city post-COVID, I really recommend that you guys consider pulling this issue off the ballot, because all you're doing right now is causing literally neighbors to start fighting with each other over this, and it's not worth it.
Thank all right. You. Thank you, Matt, for your comment. Paul Cunningham, any closing thoughts on this in a few seconds?
Well, I think it's important that we let the voters decide on whether or not they want this investment into the city. And again, as far as the bus system goes, we still have more riders than we ever had on the bus system. There are some pieces to it on the safety side that I have concerns with, that everybody does, and we're going to continue to work on them.
All right, Paul Cunningham, thank you very much, Paul, for coming in. And we'll visit with you in February. And, of course, we'll be talking a lot more about 414. I'm sure the police chief tomorrow will have something to say about it as well. Take a break right here. Retired three-star general Jeff Buchanan is waiting in the wings. Boy, I got a lot for the general. That's coming up after the mid-show break. Thanks.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rieto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
All right, jam-packed program as usual. We put a lot of content in our 60-minute daily program here on the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. So many of the flowering plants at the Buckmaster Bungalow are gone. I'll tell you, this cold weather, it's been tough. And as I've said, it's the coldest January in at least 25 years. So they're going to be really busy over at Green Things and Zocalo Village because a lot of people are going to need replacement plants for the back patio. Zocalo Village has some beautiful pottery. Now they're doing these fountains that really add a nice touch to the garden. They're at 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, Zocalo Village. Their website, zocalovillage.com, and Green Things, greenthingsaz.com. When we do our telephone interviews, the phone line, the live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Once a month, we try to get Lieutenant Jeffrey Buchanan, retired three-star Army general, to come by, and he's very good about that, and we love having him on the program. He retired after a nearly 40-year Army career. That was back in 2019. During his career, he commanded 6,000 troops on the southwest border, led a military operation in Puerto Rico after Hurricane Maria. He did four tours in Iraq, one in Afghanistan. He's a homegrown guy when it comes to the military. University of Arizona through the ROTC program. He advises and has advised Homeland Security, and he is one of the five commissioners on the Arizona Game and Fish Commission. And he's an advisor for Vet Voice, their foundation. He's a volunteer deputy sheriff in the smallest, but I think the prettiest county in Arizona, Santa Cruz County, where he resides with his lovely wife on a 13 miles from the Mexican border. Hey, General, how are you?
I'm great, Bill. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. We've got a lot of things to cover. We'll put the game and fish stuff off the side for a few minutes because the President Trump just announced in the last 24 hours, what are we going to have, 1,500 military troops sent to the border. This has been done before, right?
Yeah, I mean, I had about 6,000 troops under my command from, we were stretched from Brownsville to San Diego, and it's, obviously, we've been dealing with border security for, well, you can go back to 1916 and Pancho Villa and everything that came out of that. But we've been doing it pretty
General
regularly.
Patton, by the way, he wasn't a general at the time, but he was involved.
He was.
And so was General Pershing, who wasn't a general at the time. But they kind of cut their teeth in the Army.
In many ways, you know, one of that...
that campaign.
The expedition, as it was called, was actually helpful for all these guys because that happened just the year before most of them deployed to Europe to,
1917,
to fight in World War One.
Yeah,
I used to live in the Pershing House, believe it or not, on Fort Sam Houston, which is where he lived when he was called to that mission.
Yeah, but it's interesting that they used a lot of innovative things for the time, aerial bombardments, mounting a machine gun on a motorized vehicle. This is all like new stuff.
They were doing a lot of things.
Yeah.
You know, and really probably the biggest effect was what they got in experience for their leaders, just leading troops under tough conditions and everything.
So
back
any,
to your question, though. I saw the announcement. I know, of course, U.S. Northern Command is leading the effort, just like they did the last time, and I'll be paying close attention to see how this comes out. My suspicion is this is going to be similar to the last mission in that, you know, it will be military forces in support of Customs and Border Protection who will continue to do the law enforcement tasks. The military troops. My instinct will be doing support tasks, you know, assisting with flying people from place to place for reinforcing observation, maybe reinforcing obstacles. But unless we have a declaration of, you know, the Insurrection Act or something like that that sets aside the idea of posse comitatus, we won't see.
Yeah, that was my next question.
Yeah, we probably won't.
What is the mission? The mission has to be very narrow and focused, doesn't it?
Well, it could. I haven't seen the actual orders, so
right.
I'm not going to guess on
this. I know you're at a disadvantage
specifics.
On that. Yeah.
Right. But
yeah.
This is what I think it's, you know, CBP has been needing help, and the military has a lot of capability to provide that help.
Mm-hmm.
And so that support, it's actually been ongoing for the last 6 years anyway.
Where's that based out of? Is Southern Arizona?
No, they actually, you know, when I commanded the effort, I was the Joint Task Force Commander based in San Antonio, Texas, which is where my headquarters was. But
okay.
But I had a sector each in Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, and California.
All right. I want to touch on some numbers that came out that are truly shocking in the Ukraine-Russian war, which is coming up on its three-year anniversary. Hard to believe. Yesterday was just a bloodbath in an area near Kursk. And for folks that know World War II history, the largest tank battle I think ever was there between the Russians and the German forces. But anyway, here are the numbers, and they've been verified by news media organizations. 1,300 killed in action or wounded Russian forces in one day, 62 artillery assets, 12 armored combat vehicles, and 6 tanks. We don't have any idea about the Russian or the Ukrainian losses, but that's unbelievable.
It is. Huge numbers, especially for a land battle in Europe. We haven't seen anything like that in Europe since World War II.
Right.
I, of course, am not directly involved. I don't have a lot of detailed information. But you would know Kursk mm-hmm. is in Russia.
Yes,
it's not in Ukraine. And so then there's some question about, okay, what is pushing this? And I suppose my best analysis is that the Ukrainians are instigating this because they're trying to improve their position at the bargaining table.
Mm-hmm.
If Ukraine and Russia are both, you know, tired of this mm-hmm. and they want to move on, well, both of them have an incentive to try to improve their own leverage. Mm-hmm.
And here's another astounding number that also came out today. 825,000 Russian troops have been killed or wounded in this conflict. And we don't have numbers.
No, that can't be.
Huh? Could that be right?
Well, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe if you include all the wounded.
Yeah, they're including the wounded.
Okay.
That's
a lot.
That's a lot. And we don't have the Ukrainian numbers. And one of the things President Trump said on the campaign trail, I'm going to end this thing when, you know, in 24 hours or 48 hours after he took office. And I think he's realizing this is going to be a little tougher to do, isn't it, to get everybody to the peace table.
Yeah. And, you know, it's in the end, it's got to be in the interests of both of those nations to pursue peace. And I think there's been enough bloodshed. And I mean, just, you know, they are both probably motivated to end it. Of course, they want to end it on their own terms.
Of course.
And that's where we see some of these big pushes and things coming from.
Yeah, I want to circle back before we take the break, General Buchanan, to the border, and because you do have the firsthand experience commanding, I think at one point there were 6,000 troops on the right. Southwest border. This is all coming at a time when we have had some of the lowest numbers of illegal crossers in years on the sector, the Arizona sector anyway. Do you think some of that might have been in anticipation that Trump was going to become the president?
No. So if you go back to 2017,
mm-hmm.
I think you clearly had that effect.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the numbers there, the numbers dropped way down when President Trump was first inaugurated. And that was not by any change in policy or action. That was driven by the perception for those crossing on what they thought might happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the numbers went up during his time in office. And then they went really up after President Biden was in charge of the border, really driven by different policy decisions. Well, some of those policy decisions he reversed before he left office, and that's what I believe drove the drop in numbers. It really is not about President Trump so much and future enforcement. But we clearly saw that effect the last time around, and maybe that is playing into it. I haven't thought in detail about it, and I certainly haven't talked to those that are trying to cross the border and figure out what's going on. But that's my best guess.
And I know I put you on the spot, but of course
you do all the time, and I'm ready for it.
You're ready for it. Well, you know, I want to bring back about Secretary of Defense, and you know, we'll see this gentleman that is being possibly, maybe confirmed, doesn't have a whole lot of military experience, correct?
Well, it's not. He has personal military experience at the lower,
He does
level,
yes.
And I don't want to, you know, take anything away from that.
Mm-hmm.
My concern on experience is really at the, you know, what goes on at the strategic level. What's happening? How does, you know, what happens in interactions between the executive branch and legislative branch? You know, what's our interaction with our allies around the world? All these kinds of things that one would hope the secretary, who's going to be directly involved in a lot of these decisions, has some foundational experience. And the last time I was on the show is, if confirmed, what I hope is that he's a quick learner and surrounds himself with some people who are great advisors. I think he's got a lot to learn, and you know, as long as he's open to learning, then I think, you know, there's potential for him to do a good
and
job.
And traditionally, the Secretary of the Army and all of the other, he would be above those positions.
See, what's different about the Secretary of Defense is the Secretary of Defense is in the chain of command for all the military forces. The chain of command goes president, secretary of defense, and then to combatant commanders.
So how important is that? I mean, it's right below the president.
And, you know, access to nuclear codes, all these kinds of things. So it is a different type of set of responsibilities than Secretary of Army or Secretary of the Navy, et cetera, which are there dominantly to raise forces and prepare them for the readiness of combat. But when it comes time to commanding troops in action, the Secretary of Defense is in the chain and those others are not.
All right, we'll take a break right here. More with Jeff Buchanan, retired 3-star general, on the Buckmaster Show. Be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
You can now review and comment on the Regional Transportation Authority's draft $2.46 billion Regional Transportation Plan at one of several upcoming RTA Next open houses. The draft 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, and environmental improvements for the greater Tucson region. It's your plan. Tell us what you think. Learn more and find dates for an upcoming open house near you at rtanext.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. we grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, covering a lot of ground today. And before we continue on with General Jeff Buchanan, retired three-star Army general and a member of the five-member Arizona Game and Fish, I want to mention that got a great sponsor in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. We send so many of our listeners over to that beautiful area of the Land of Enchantment. Start your planning for an enchanting weekend or a midweek getaway by visiting their website, southwestnewmexico.org. And by the way, did I mention it's only about 3-hour drive? You hit I-10, take a left at Lordsburg, head up the mountain, and before you know it, after you turn off there at I-10, you'll be up there in about 45 minutes. Great place, Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. General Buchanan with us in studio, and talk a little bit about what's going on with Game and Fish. First of all, I mentioned this cold snap, and it really isn't. It's been more than a snap. When we say cold snap, you think of a couple of nights. This has been a whole January deal, General, and there's not a drop of rain. Three months without really any measurable rain here.
That's a really amazing thing to me. You know, at my house outside Patagonia, we had a good, solid monsoon, 14 inches of rain during June, July, and August. But we haven't had a drop of rain since October, and it's driving some things in the Game and Fish Department. We had two of our hatcheries. We have seven hatcheries in the state. Two of them, Tano Creek and Canyon Creek, we actually had to take trout out. We had to reduce, the technical term is reduce the biomass by 10%. But what we did is we restocked, you know, trout in a number of places in the White Mountains that were not planned.
But you had to take trout out.
Because the water levels are so low.
Yeah.
And, you know, it could impact our operations next summer.
We have a pretty good trout deal here in Arizona.
We do. Yeah. You know, we have. We provide, you know, lots of opportunities for anglers through stocking rainbow trout, but also Gila and Apache trout, which are two native trout species.
All right, a couple of important stories, one dealing with restoring the Mexican wolf to Arizona and New Mexico. That's going, I understand, better than expected so far after a 5-year review by the federal agency. That's the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. What really jumps out at me and really sad, General, is there may not be any wolves or least that we know of functioning wolf population south of the border.
Yeah, you know, the parameters to eventually remove the Mexican wolf from the endangered list, on the endangered species list,
yes,
is that we have to have stable populations of a certain size in New Mexico and Arizona for X number of years, but it also requires a population in Mexico. And the Arizona and New Mexico side of the border, we've been doing actually better than expected. But mm-hmm. as you mentioned, things are looking pretty dire down there. And a lot of it has to do with people poisoning wolves and things.
Oh, so, that is so sad.
You know, it's
and that's illegal poisoning.
It is.
Yeah, that's in Mexico, not, that's not against being the law enforced. In Mexico.
Right.
Yeah, but the last overall count from Mexico shows there might be a few lone wolves, as they say, yeah. But there's not much left there.
It's an important program, and it's a lot of interagency cooperation between us and the Game and Fish and Fish and Wildlife and the White Mountain Apache Tribe. One of the key things, though, is that our regular engagement with the cattlemen and ranchers.
Okay.
So we work very closely with them to ensure that they can help us be part of the solutions to some of these issues instead of part of the problem.
So if they've got a problem, do they call you?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And, you know, we deal
rather
with...
Rather than them taking action,
right,
they call you first.
We have range riders that will go harass wolves. We can remove problem wolves. You know, if one of them has a cow that dies in their pasture, either we will remove that cow or pay them $200 to remove the carcass because we don't want to teach wolves to eat cows, you know.
Wow.
So
yeah,
it's an active program.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally we have some problems, but we're in communication, and I think that's what counts.
Yeah, Game and Fish here in the state has been past couple of weeks using helicopters, fixed-wing aircraft, trying to get an idea of how many deer and javelina that we have in the hunting regions across the area.
Yeah, you know,
I wonder if the drought's going to impact that, General.
Well, sure. Yeah, it'll drive our numbers even lower. But we maintain a close handle on all our populations, especially of game animals, because we want to make sure that we allocate the right number of permits for what we can afford to harvest in the next year. And so that's why this is all tied together.
How much do you have, does that vary every year usually?
It does. It depends, and it's driven by conditions. For example, up in the, in an area in Apache Sitgraves National Forest up in the White Mountains, we've had significant reduction of mule deer population over the last several years. Much of that is probably driven by an excess of feral horses that are out there out-competing the deer and keeping them away from water holes. But when we get the reduction in population, our permits follow and we go down because we want to make sure that we're able to maintain stable populations. And so, you know, from time to time, we will cut off hunting entirely or reduce the harvest.
Do we have any idea? You brought up something I had not even thought about the horses, the wild horses. Do you have, or do we have any gauge on how many wild horses there
are
in Arizona?
We do. So, yeah, we have a pretty good handle. We've got some, I don't want to get too much into semantics, but a wild horse and a feral horse are not the same thing.
Okay.
Wild horse is protected by
the
Wild Horse and Burrow Act of 1971, and they had to have been here on the landscape for a certain amount of time.
Oh, a
feral horse.
Whereas
a feral horse, what happened in the result of some big wildfires up in the White Mountains is fences burned down, and then these horses came off of the Apache reservation, and they have gone wild, for lack of a better term.
Sure.
But they're at somewhere in the neighborhood of 900% over what the strength should be within their area. So we're working very closely with the Forest Service on horses and the Bureau of Land Management on burros to try to get their numbers back in check.
Well, that's why I do this show, to try to learn something every day, the difference between a wild horse and a feral horse. A feral horse is one that got away and
that's
now
right.
is wild.
That's
so,
right.
Anyway, General, always we learned so much from you, and we'll look forward to your visit in February. I hope the new year is off to a good start for you and your lovely family.
It is. And I've got a freezer full of meat, so there you have
there
it.
There you go. You stocked up for this very cold winter that we're having.
Yes,
all right. On behalf of General Buchanan and Tom Fairbanks, who does such a nice job for us on the other side of the glass, we always want to acknowledge his work. Bill Buckmaster, wishing everybody well. Reminder, tomorrow we've got the police chief at noon. Okay.